I'm Todd Hatton. You're listening to Sounds Good, and I'm joined in the studio by Kate Lochte and Mr. Bill Call. Welcome to the both of you.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming, Bill. And we regret that Jeff Steen is not able to join us at this time. But what's on our mind today, because Bill is a local emergency management officer in Callaway, is what civil authorities in our county, in our region, how they prep for an earthquake, in thinking about the criticism following the Nepal earthquake that civil authorities weren't ready to deal with it. And, you know, when I do just a quick study, it's hard to know how anybody's ready to deal with an earthquake when it comes, push comes
Absolutely.
To shove.
That would be even for us if we had a quake of that magnitude, which, by the way, at 7.8, that's approximately the magnitude of the Great New Madrid quake that was experienced in our area in 1812-1814. You know, that if we had that today, we would be overwhelmed as well. Now, I don't think we'd have the damage that they had in Nepal, and probably not the loss of life, because their building standards are different and their population is much more densely packed than what it is in, particularly in western Kentucky. But it would still be an overwhelming disaster for us to respond to. And it's very difficult to prepare for something of that magnitude. Probably the closest thing we've had in recent years to having to think about this was our 2009 ice storm, January, February 2009, where we had ice in this region that took down the power, and in Murray and Callaway County took out much of the water distribution as well. And that was a great big disruption to our area. And when I talked to people about preparedness now, I said, you know, that really was a learning curve for us. That was a learning experience. When we beforehand would talk about being ready for any kind of major disaster, it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around. But once you've gone through something like our ice storm, and you know how life was suddenly without electricity, without water, without telephone, then you begin to get the idea of what, you know, what can go wrong, and how difficult it is to totally be prepared. But in the ice storm, we really, for the most part, didn't lose our transportation systems. Some of the small roads were blocked for a time, but the major roads were still passable. We didn't lose natural gas. We still had our fuel sources that way. Only in just driving 20 miles, 30 miles, you could get to a place that had gasoline, or even full services. So imagine if those resources had been taken from us too, or as they might be in the case of a 7.8 earthquake again, life would be suddenly even more difficult. And so how do you prepare for such a thing? It's a very difficult preparation to do. It's very difficult to get your mind just wrapped around what would be the steps that you would take. How would you get help and relief and so forth? But as bad as the 2009 ice storm was, we had very little loss of life, just a great big inconvenience, really. And so that has helped us begin thinking about steps we ought to take to be more resilient, to be more prepared, to have things lined up better. And we've made progress.
I recall before, many years ago, when I think it was Ivan Browning predicted an earthquake in our region, and everybody went into a round of preparedness to the point that the university was offering CPR classes for people in advance of the earthquake, and we were all given some tips about what to sequester logistically around you to have in case of an emergency. But that sort of approach has gone by the wayside in terms of regularity of preparedness drilling.
We have these incidents or events that take place that get us thinking about it. And then as time goes on, that's easy to lose sight of. You're correct. And those emergency kits that we put together 20 years ago or 5 years ago or whenever, they get stale. They're out of date. And it takes then a fresh reminder sometimes for us to consider, we need to go back and look at this, throw out the old things, put in some new, think better about what we need to do in preparation. We need to update those contact sheets, the phone numbers and so forth that we would need to use, because as life goes on, these things need to be updated and refreshed. You're correct. The Browning thing, I think that was 93. I'm not sure. We did quite a bit of work on Murray State campus, of even inventorying what the hazards were in almost every room on campus. We haven't done that since, and yet a lot of those rooms have changed or even new and needs to be done from time to time.
I can't even remember, we used to have annual just discussions through public safety about, and they passed out little sheets of what to do if an earthquake hits.
Yes.
Is it drop?
Drop, cover, and hold on.
Drop, cover, and hold on.
Right. In other words, if you start shaking, if you're at a desk, say, or in a room with a table, then get under that object. You drop, you get under that object, that's cover.
I'm
hold
laughing.
On to the legs of it. So it doesn't slide out from under you.
I remember being in one session, and this is just an aside, in room 623 of this building, which is a classroom with those seats with the armrests.
Oh, yes.
And they told us to drop cover.
Not much
and there's no place
cover.
To drop and cover, but everybody in the room tried to crawl under the chair, and it was absurd. And, and some of what you can read online seems absurd. Like I was looking in one personal emergency kit, it said $2 in quarters for a telephone. Keep that handy. And I'm thinking to myself,
talk about something that needs updating. That's right. Where are the payphones?
So there are plenty of resources for how to be prepared, but you gotta think about these
That's
things
right.
too. About what do you really need to. What would be the absolute basic that you would have handy?
I would say, again, in order to get your mind wrapped around this thing, which is enormous in what it could be, think about something you have experienced as an emergency situation that you wished you'd had this or that, or something you had was very handy, such as the big ice storm. And we're all fairly familiar with how to plan for a winter storm. So, the drill, if a winter storm is coming, you put in several days' worth of supplies of the food essentials, and you draw some water into containers and have that just in case. You charge batteries, you make sure your weather radio has fresh batteries and so forth. And if you are running low on prescriptions, you get refills done where you've got several days of prescription medicines on hand. You have a plan for if something happens and you're separated, the kids are at school or you're at work or whatever, that you have reunion arrangements made where you either know how to call someone and make, if you can't get directly in contact with each other, or someone's prepared to take care of your kids. You do all these type of preparations for something you know is coming. Well, it ought to be a similar mindset to something you don't know is coming, which is the situation with an earthquake, but you still have those kind of preparations fairly fresh and ready. So if the unexpected happens, you can deal with it much better than you could if you didn't have those preparations done.
Now going back to the ice storm, at that point in time, we all knew where shelters would pop up. And the Callaway County chapter of the American Red Cross was here and part of the conversation about sheltering. And now there's not a local chapter, it's part
right.
of a regional chapter. And I couldn't tell you right now where shelters would be, but I bet you can.
Well, unfortunately, in Murray and Callaway County, we don't have a designated storm shelter at all for sheltering if housing if houses were destroyed, for example, in some kind of event, there is a list. Even though there's not a local chapter office now, there are still Red Cross volunteers here. We would call upon those folks to coordinate shelters. A good many spontaneous shelters occurred in the 2009 ice storm and would in this situation as well, from facilities that, you know, are undamaged or relatively undamaged, public buildings or semi-public buildings such as churches and schools, for example, would be pressed into service. And there are Red Cross volunteers that would help manage those things. We have lost that local touch of having a chapter office, but there are still plans and still people to set sheltering up if we need to do that.
I recall being at an earthquake exercise, what if an earthquake happens, with all of the first responders in the region. And I felt overwhelmed as a citizen listening to the degrees of difficulty first responders would encounter.
Exactly.
Is there a different level of preparedness that the first responders are ready for than just regular folks?
The agencies themselves typically will have some depth of response plans and equipment and so forth. Individual responders, they're like you and me. Some do better than others in terms of their own family preparations and so forth. And yet that's where it starts, is at the individual and the family level. Because even a first responder can't come out and be a policeman or a fireman or a Red Cross volunteer unless their own family is first taken care of. And we tell them, that's your first responsibility, is you yourself and your family and your immediate surroundings. And only when those are stable and taken care of do you then report for duty as a responder. So that's the level that it has to start at.
Another thing I remember about that exercise was the granularity with respect to construction or reconstruction after earthquake damage, with having to have certified contractors in the mix. And that sounded to me like just a mess.
The building codes are such, yes, that you have to have, or you can have reoccupancy of a damaged building. Some kind of inspection has to be done by someone certified to do that. Will those people be available after an earthquake? That's a question. And unfortunately, until we go through it, we don't know how well that will take place, how quickly that will take place.
As we are watching the construction of the bridges underway, do you know whether earthquake earthquake design has
yes.
been a part of that?
You know, I'm not a civil engineer, so I can't quote the standards and so forth. But that's a factor in all modern construction. There are our codes have increased in recent years, and you know the most recent buildings at Murray State are all built to earthquake resistant standards. I think starting back in the mid 80s, we started actually requiring, or that was part of the requirement of the design. The industry tech building where I taught until I retired several years ago was built in 1991, and you can easily see the zoning that's built into it with the separation between sections and so forth. So a good bit of design goes into all modern buildings, particularly public buildings. So it's going to be the case with those bridges as well. We've still got lots of older bridges that were not designed to those standards and have not been upgraded or retrofitted. Those would be where our problem areas are.
Well, there's a lot to chew on here. Do you have any recommended websites that you particularly like as online sources for getting your head in order for preparedness?
Well, Kentucky Emergency Management has a website. It's kyem.ky.gov. And the preparedness tab or section on that has a section about earthquake preparedness and a link to the Central United States Earthquake Consortium, or CUSEC as we call it, C-U-S-E-C. And that's really a excellent resource. That's a consortium, I think, of eight states in our region that worked together on preparedness, particularly centered around the New Madrid Fault. So lots of very relevant information for our part of the country.
So I guess the takeaway in this conversation with Bill Call, who is actively involved in preparedness, local emergency management, is to pay attention to being ready for things.
Exactly. You know, it might not happen in our lifetime. It might happen this afternoon. That's the nature of earthquake situations. But we know even any emergency can take place, and we can think about preparing for others maybe easier than we can the earthquake. Any preparation that you do for any kind of emergency helps when something like an earthquake comes along. So general preparedness is a good first step. Education about particulars with earthquake would be an excellent step as well. The QSEC website has a good number of suggestions for preparedness kits to have available, for plans to work on, and then for things to do immediately if one occurs. The drop, cover, and hold on exercise is good. The annual earthquake shakeout exercise, I've actually done that during that exercise, partly for fun and partly to just see if it was practical. And so at the announced time, I would see if I could get under my desk in my office and hold on. And I found out it's pretty crowded under there, and I don't fit very well. I may need to think about better plans. But I have a big bookcase right over that desk, and in thinking through this annual shakeout exercise about what should be done, I decided, you know, I need to anchor that bookcase to the wall with good stout straps so that whether or not I can get under this desk, at least I won't have the bookcase falling down on me. So I've done that. So there are little things you can do that improve your odds of being able to survive the thing and be able to help others afterwards.
Thanks for being here today.
Sure.